Give it to you straight with none of this pussyfooting around business. I like that. After several minutes of watching farmers in faded overalls and their women in flower sack cut dresses promenading under the verandas, TJ said, "Why don't we go on down to the mercantile and look around?" Stacy hesitated. "I don't know. I think Big Ma wanted to go with us." "Aw, shoot, man. We'll be doing her a favor. We go on down to the mercantile now and order up our stuff. We'll save her some time so when she comes from seeing that lawyer, we can just go on home. Besides, I got something to show you." Stacy pondered the suggestion for a long moment. "Well, I guess it'll be all right," he said finally.
"Big Ma said to stay here," I objected,
hoping that Mr. Jamison would come out with Big Ma. "Stay here, then," Stacy called over his shoulder as he crossed the street with TJ. I dashed after them. I wasn't about to stay on that sidewalk by myself. The Barnett Mercantile had everything. Its shelves, counters, and floor space boasted items from ladies' ribbons to burlap bags of seeds, from babies' bottles to brand-new potbelly stoves. TJ, who had been to the store several times before, wove his way among the farmers and led us to a counter at the far corner of the room. The counter had a glass top, and beneath the glass were handguns artfully displayed on a bolt of red velvet.
"Just look at it," TJ said dreamily. "Ain't she something?"
"What?" I said.
"That pearl-handled one. Stacy, man, you ever seen a gun like that before in your whole life? I'd sell my life for that gun. One of these days, I'm gonna have it, too."
"I reckon I ain't," said Stacy politely. "It's a nice-looking gun, all right." I stared down at the gun. The price tag of $35.95 stared back at me.
$35.95, I almost screamed. "Just for an old gun? What the devil you gonna use it for? Can't hunt with it."
TJ looked at me with disgust.
"Ain't supposed to hunt with it. It's for protection."
"Protection of what?" I asked, thinking of Papa's sturdy shotgun that hung over his and Mama's bed, and the sleek Winchester rifle which Big Ma kept locked in the trunk beneath our own bed.
"That thing couldn't hardly kill a rattlesnake."
"There's other things a body needs protecting from more than a rattlesnake," he said haughtily. "I get me that gun, and ain't nobody gonna mess with me. I wouldn't need nobody." Stacy backed away from the counter. He seemed nervous being in the store. "We better get those things you need and get on out of here before Big Ma comes looking for us."
"Aw, man, there's plenty of time," said TJ, looking longingly at the gun. "Sure wish I could just hold it just once."
"Come on, TJ," ordered Stacy, "or me and Cassie's gonna go on back outside."
"Oh, all right."
TJ turned reluctantly away and went to a counter where a man was measuring nails onto a scale. We stood patiently waiting behind the people in front of us, and when our turn came, TJ handed his list to the man.
"Mr. Barnett, sir," he said, "I got me this here list of things my mama want."
The storekeeper studied the list and, without looking up, asked,
"You one of Mr. Granger's people?"
"Yes, sir,"
answered TJ. Mr. Barnett walked to another counter and began filling the order. But before he finished, a white woman called.
"Mr. Barnett, you waiting on anybody just now?"
Mr. Barnett turned around. "Just them," he said, indicating us with a wave of his hand.
"What can I do for you, Ms. Emmeline?"
The woman handed him a list twice as long as TJ's, and the storekeeper, without a word of apology to us, proceeded to fill it.
"What's he doing?"
I objected.
"Hush, Cassie,"
said Stacy, looking very embarrassed and uncomfortable. TJ's face was totally bland, as if nothing at all had happened. When the woman's order was finally filled, Mr. Barnett again picked up TJ's list. But before he had gotten the next item, his wife called.
"Jim Lee? These folks needin' help over here, and I got my hands full."
And as if we were not even there, he walked away.
"Where's he going?" I cried.
"He'll be back," said TJ, wandering away.
After waiting several minutes for Mr. Barnett's return, Stacy said, "Come on, Cassie, let's go." He started toward the door, and I followed. But as we passed one of the counters, I spied Mr. Barnett wrapping an order of pork chops for a white girl. Adults were one thing. I could almost understand that. They ruled things, and there was nothing that could be done about them. But some kid who was no bigger than me was something else again. Certainly Mr. Barnett had simply forgotten about TJ's order. I decided to remind him, and without saying anything to Stacy, I turned around and marched over to Mr. Barnett.
Excuse me, Mr. Barnett, I said as politely as I could, waiting a moment for him to look up from his wrapping. I think you forgot, but you was waiting on us for you was waiting on this girl here, and we've been waiting a good while now for you to get back. The girl gazed at me strangely, but Mr. Barnett did not look up. I assumed he had not heard me. I was near the end of the counter, so I merely went to the other side of it and tugged on his shirt sleeve to get his attention. He recoiled as if I had struck him. You was helping us, I said, backing to the front of the counter again.
Well, you just get your little black self back over there and wait some more, he said in a low, tight voice. I was hot. I had been as nice as I could be to him, and here he was talking like this. We've been waiting on you for near an hour, I hissed, while you round here waiting on everybody else, and it ain't fair. You got no right. Whose little nigger is this? Bellowed Mr. Barnett.
Everyone in the store turned and stared at me.
I ain't nobody's little nigger, I screamed, angry and humiliated, and you ought not be waiting on everybody, for you wait on us.
Hush up, child, hush up, someone whispered behind me. I looked around. A woman who had occupied the wagon next to ours at the market looked down upon me. Mr. Barnett, his face red and eyes bulging, immediately pounced on her.
This gal yourn, Hazel?
No, sir, answered the woman meekly, stepping hastily away to show she had nothing to do with me. As I watched her turn her back on me, Stacy emerged and took my hand.
Come on, Cassie. Let's get out of here.
Stacy!
I exclaimed, relieved to see him by my side.
Tell him! You know he ain't fair making us wait.
She your sister, boy?
Mr. Barnett spat across the counter. Stacy bit his lower lip and gazed into Mr. Barnett's eyes.
Yes, sir? Then you get her out of here, he said with hateful force, and make sure she don't come back till your mammy teach her what she is.
I already know what I am, I retaliated, but I bet you don't know what you are, and I could sure tell you, too, you old...
Stacy jerked me forward, crushing my hand in the effort, and whispered angrily,
Shut up, Cassie!
His dark eyes flashed malevolently as he pushed me in front of him through the crowd. As soon as we were outside, I whipped my hand from his.
What's the matter with you? You know he was wrong.
Stacy swallowed to flush his anger, then said gruffly,
I know it, and you know it, but he don't know it, and that's where the trouble is. Now come on before you get us into a real mess. I'm going up to Mr. Jameson's to see what's keeping Big Ma.
What about TJ? I called as he stepped into the street.
Stacy laughed wryly. Don't worry about TJ. He knows exactly how to act. He crossed the street sullenly then, his hands jammed in his pockets. I watched him go, but didn't follow. Instead, I ambled along the sidewalk trying to understand why Mr. Barnett had acted the way he had. More than once I stopped and gazed over my shoulder at the mercantile. I had a good mind to go back in and find out what had made Mr. Barnett so mad. I actually turned once and headed toward the store. Then, remembering what Mr. Barnett had said about my returning, I swung back around, kicking at the sidewalk, my head bowed. It was then that I bumped into Lillian Jean Sims.
Why don't you look where you're going?
She asked huffily. Jeremy and her two younger brothers were with her.
Hey, Cassie, said Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy, I said solemnly, keeping my eyes on Lillian Jean. Well, apologize, she ordered.
What? You bumped into me, now you apologize. I did not feel like messing with Lily and Jean. I had other things on my mind.
Okay, I said, starting past. I'm sorry.
Lily and Jean sidestepped in front of me. That ain't enough. Get down in the road. I looked up at her.
You crazy?
You can't watch where you're going. Get in the road. Maybe that way you won't be bumping into decent white folks with your little nasty self. This second insult of the day was almost more than I could bear. Only the thought of Big Ma up in Mr. Jameson's office saved Lily and Jean's lip.
I ain't nasty, I said, properly holding my temper in check. And if you're so afraid of getting bumped, walk down there yourself.
I started past her again. And again she got in my way.
Oh, let her pass, Lily and Jean, said Jeremy. She ain't done nothing to you.
She done something to me just standing in front of me. With that, she reached for my arm and attempted to push me off the sidewalk. I braced myself and swept my arm backward out of Lillian Jean's reach, but someone caught it from behind, painfully twisting it, and shoved me off the sidewalk into the road. I landed bottom first on the ground. Mr. Sims glared down at me. When my gal Lillian Jean says for you to get yourself off the sidewalk, you get. You hear? Behind him were his sons, R.W. and Melvin. People from the store began to ring the Simses.
Ain't that the same little nigger was cutting up back there at Jim Lee's? Someone asked.
Yeah, she's the one, answered Mr. Sims. You hear me talking to you, gal? You apologize to Ms. Lillian Jean this minute. I stared up at Mr. Sims, frightened. Jeremy appeared frightened, too.
I apologized already.
Jeremy seemed relieved that I had spoken.
She did pop, right now, for y'all come, she did.
Mr. Sims turned an angry gaze upon his son, and Jeremy faltered, looked at me, and hung his head. Then Mr. Sims jumped into the street. I moved away from him, trying to get up. He was a mean-looking man, red in the face and bearded. I was afraid he was going to hit me before I could get to my feet, but he didn't. I scrambled up and ran blindly for the wagon. Someone grabbed me, and I fought wildly, attempting to pull loose.
Stop, Cassie, Big Ma said. Stop, it's me. We're going home now.
Not for she apologized to my gal, you ain't, said Mr. Sims.
Big Ma gazed down at me, fear in her eyes, then back at the growing crowd.
She's just a child.
Tell her, Auntie.
Big Ma looked at me again, her voice cracking as she spoke.
Gone, child.
Apologize.
But Big Ma...
Her voice hardened. Do like I say. I swallowed hard.
Go on.
I'm sorry, I mumbled. I'm sorry, Ms. Lillian Jean, demanded Mr. Sims.
Big Ma,
I balked. Say it, child. A painful tear slid down my cheek, and my lips trembled.
I'm sorry, Ms. Lillian Jean.
When the words had been spoken, I turned and fled, crying into the back of the wagon. No day in all my life had ever been as cruel as this one. Chapter 6. The ride home was long and silent. None of us felt like talking, not even TJ. Big Ma had informed him shortly after leaving Strawberry that she did not want to hear another word out of him before we reached home. He sulked for a while, with a few audible grumbles, which no one paid any attention to, but finally he fell asleep and didn't awaken until we had driven up the Granger Road and stopped in front of the Avery house. By the time Jack pulled into our own yard, the night was a thick blackness and smelled of a coming rain. Big Ma climbed wearily down from the wagon and went into the house without a word. I stayed with Stacy to help him put the wagon inside the barn and unhitch and feed Jack. While I held the flashlight on the barn doors, Stacy slowly slid aside the plank of wood that held the doors fastened.
Cassie, he said in a quiet, thoughtful voice, don't go blaming Big Ma for what she done.
Why not? I asked angrily. She made me apologize to that old ugly Lillian Jean about something wasn't even my fault.
She took them old Sims's side without even hearing mine.
Well, maybe she couldn't help it, Cassie. Maybe she had to do it.
Had to do it? I practically screamed. She didn't have to do nothing. She's grown, just like that Mr. Sims, and she should have stood up for me. I wouldn't have done her that way.
Stacy put the plank on the ground and leaned against the barn. There's things you don't understand, Cassie.
And I suppose you do, huh? Ever since you went down into Louisiana to get Papa last summer, you think you know so doggone much. Well, I bet you I know one thing. If that had been Papa, he wouldn't have made me apologize. He would have listened to me.
Stacy sighed and swung open the barn doors.
Well, Papa, that's different. But Big Ma ain't Papa. And you can't expect...
His voice trailed off as he peered into the barn. Suddenly he cried,
Cassie, give me that flashlight.
Then, before I could object, he tore the flashlight from my hand and shone it into the barn.
What's Mr. Granger's car doing in our barn? I exclaimed as a silver Packard was unveiled by the light.
Without answering me, Stacy swiftly turned and ran toward the house. I followed closely behind. Throwing open the door to Mama's room, we stood dumbfounded in the doorway. Instead of Mr. Granger, a tall, handsome man, nattily dressed in a gray pinstripe suit and vest, stood by the fire with his arm around Big Ma. For a moment we swayed with excitement, then, as if by signal, we both cried,
Uncle Hammer!
And dashed into his arms. Uncle Hammer was 2 years older than Papa, and unmarried. He came every winter to spend the Christmas season with us. Like Papa, he had dark red-brown skin, a square-jawed face, and high cheekbones. Yet there was a great difference between them somehow. His eyes, which showed a great warmth as he hugged and kissed us now, often had a cold, distant glaze. And there was an aloofness in him which the boys and I could never quite bridge. When he let us go, Stacy and I both grew consciously shy, and we backed away. I sat down beside Christopher John and Little Man, who were silently gazing up at Uncle Hammer, but Stacy stammered,
What's Mr. Granger's car doing in our barn?
That's your Uncle Hammer's car, Mama said. Did you unhitch Jack?
Uncle Hammer's?
Stacy exclaimed, exchanging shocked glances with me.
No kidding!
Big Ma stammered. Hammer, you went and got a car like Harlan Granger's? Uncle Hammer smiled a strange, wry smile.
Well, not exactly like it, Mama. Mine's a few months newer.
Last year when I come down here, I was right impressed with that big old packet of Mr. Harlan Fillmore Granger's, and I thought I'd like to own one myself. It seems that me and Harlan Granger just got the same taste. He winked slyly at Stacy.
Don't it, Stacy?
Stacy grinned.
You like? Maybe we'll all go riding in it one day, if it's all right with your mama.
Oh, boy, cried Little Man. You mean it, Uncle Hammer? I asked. Mama, can we?
We'll see, Mama said. But in any case, not tonight. Stacy, go take care of Jack and draw up a bucket of water for the kitchen. We've done the other chores. Since no one told me to help Stacy, I forgot all about Jack and settled back to listen to Uncle Hammer. Christopher John and Little Man, who Big Ma had feared would be moping because they had not been allowed to go to town, seemed not at all concerned that Stacy and I had gone. They were awestruck by Uncle Hammer, and compared to his arrival, a day in Strawberry was a minor matter. For a while, Uncle Hammer talked only to Mama and Big Ma, laughing from deep down inside himself like Papa. But then, to my surprise, he turned from them and addressed me.
I understand you had your first trip to Strawberry today, Cassie, he said. What did you think?
Big Ma stiffened.
but I was pleased to have this opportunity to air my side of the Strawberry affair.
I didn't like it, I said. Them old Sims is... Mary, I feel a bit hungry, Big Ma interrupted abruptly.
Supper still warm?
Yes, ma'am, said Mama, standing. I'll set it on the table for you. As Mama stood up, I started again.
Them old Sims is...
Let Cassie get it, Mary, said Big Ma nervously. You must be tired. I looked strangely at Big Ma, then up at Mama.
Oh, I don't mind, said Mama, heading for the kitchen. Go ahead, Cassie, and tell your uncle about Strawberry.
That old Lillian Jean Sims made me so mad I could just spit.
I admit that I bumped into her, but that was 'cause I was thinking about that old Mr. Barnett waiting on everybody else in his old store before he waited on us.
Jim Lee Barnett? Asked Uncle Hammer, turning toward Big Ma. That old devil still living?
Big Ma nodded mutely, and I went on.
But I told him he shouldn't been round there waiting on everybody else before he got to us.
Cassie, Big Ma exclaimed, hearing this bit of news for the first time.
Uncle Hammer laughed.
You told him that?
Yes, sir, I said softly, wondering why he was laughing.
Oh, that's great. Then what happened?
Stacy made me leave. And Mr. Barnett told me I couldn't come back no more. And then I bumped into that confounded Lillian Jean, and she tried to make me get off the sidewalk. And then her daddy come along and he...
Big Ma's eyes grew large, and she whispered hoarsely, Cassie, I don't think.
And he twisted my arm and knocked me off the sidewalk, I exclaimed, unwilling to muffle what Mr. Sims had done.
I glanced triumphantly at Big Ma, but she wasn't looking at me. Her eyes, frightened and nervous, were on Uncle Hammer. I turned and looked at him, too. His dark eyes had narrowed to thin, angry slits. He said,
He knocked you off the sidewalk, Cassie? A grown man knocked you off the sidewalk?
Yes, sir.
This Lillian Jean Sims. Her daddy wouldn't be Charlie Sims, would it?
Yes, sir.
Uncle Hammer grasped my shoulders. What else did he do to you?
Nothing, I said, frightened by his eyes. Except he wanted me to apologize to Lillian Jean, 'cause I wouldn't get in the road when she told me to.
And you did?
Big Ma said I had to.
Uncle Hammer released me and sat very still. No one said a word. Then he stood slowly, his eyes icing into that cold, distant way they could, and he started toward the door, limping slightly on his left leg. Christopher John, little man, and I stared after him wonderingly, but Big Ma jumped up from her chair, knocking it over in her haste, and dashed after him. She grabbed his arm. "Let it be, son," she cried. "That child ain't hurt."
"Not hurt? You look into her eyes and tell me she ain't hurt."
Mama came back from the kitchen with Stacy behind her.
"What is it?"
she asked, looking from Big Ma to Uncle Hammer. "Charlie Sims knocked Cassie off the sidewalk in Strawberry, and the child just told Hammer," said Big Ma in one breath, still holding on to Uncle Hammer's arm.
"Oh, Lord," Mama groaned.
"Stacy, get Mr. Morrison. Quick now." As Stacy sped from the room, Mama's eyes darted to the shotgun over the bed, and she edged between it and Uncle Hammer. Uncle Hammer was watching her, and he said quietly, "Don't worry. I ain't gotta use David's gun. I got my own." Suddenly, Mama lunged to the side door, blocking it with her slender body.
"Hammer, now you listen to me."
But Uncle Hammer gently but firmly pushed her to one side and, brushing Big Ma from his arm, opened the door and bounded down the steps into the light rain. Little man, Christopher John, and I dashed to the door as Big Ma and Mama ran after him.
"Get back inside," Mama called over her shoulder,
but she was too busy trying to grab Uncle Hammer to see to it that we obeyed, and we didn't move.
"Hammer, Cassie's all right," she cried.
Don't go making unnecessary trouble.
Unnecessary trouble?
You think my brother died and I got my leg half blown off in their German war to have some redneck knock Cassie around any time it suits him? If I'd have knocked his girl down, you know what would have happened to me. Yeah, you know all right. Right now, I'd be hanging from that oak over yonder. Let go of me, Mary.
Mama and Big Ma could not keep him from reaching the car. But just as the Packard roared into life, a huge figure loomed from the darkness and jumped into the other side, and the car zoomed angrily down the road into the blackness of the Mississippi night.
"Where'd he go?"
I asked as Mama slowly climbed the steps. Her face under the glow of the lamp was tired, drained.
"He went up to the Simmses, didn't he? Didn't he, Mama?"
"He's not going anywhere," Mama said, stepping aside and waiting until both Big Ma and Stacy were inside. Then she locked the door.
"Mr. Morrison will bring him back," said Christopher John confidently,
although he looked somewhat bewildered by all that had happened.
"If he don't," said Little Man ominously, "I bet your Uncle Hammer will teach that old Mr. Sims a thing or two round here hitting on Cassie." "I hope he knocks his block off," I said.
Mama's gaze blazed down upon us.
"I think little mouths that have so much to say must be very tired."
"No, ma'am. Mama, we ain't.
Go to bed."
"Mama, it ain't but..."
Mama's face hardened, and I knew that it would not be in my best interest to argue further. I turned and did as I was told. Christopher John and Little Man did the same. When I got to my door, I asked,
"Ain't Stacy coming?"
Mama glanced down at Stacy sitting by the fire. "I don't recall his mouth working so hard, do you?"
"No'm,"
I muttered, and went into my room. After a few minutes, Mama came in. Without a word of reprimand, she picked up my clothes from where I had tossed them at the foot of the bed and absently draped them over the back of a chair. She said,
"Stacy tells me you blame Big Ma for what happened today. Is that right?"
I thought over her question and answered,
"Not for all of it. Just for making me apologize to that old dumb Lillian Jean Sims. She oughtn't have done that, Mama. Papa wouldn't have..."
"I don't want to hear what Papa would have done," Mama snapped. "Or what Mr. Morrison wouldn't have done, or Uncle Hammer. You were with Big Ma, and she did what she had to do. And believe me, young lady, she didn't like doing it one bit more than you did."
"Well," I muttered, "maybe so, but..."
"There's no maybe to it."
"Yes'm,"
I said softly, deciding that it was better to study the patchwork pattern on the quilt until the anger left Mama's eyes, and I could talk to her again. After a moment, she sat beside me on the bed and raised my chin with the tip of her forefinger. "Big Ma didn't want you to be hurt," she said. "That was the only thing on her mind, making sure Mr. Sims didn't hurt you."
"Yes'm,"
I murmured, then flared.
"But Mama, that Lillian Jean ain't got the brains of a flea. How come I gotta go round calling her Miz like she grown or something?"
Mama's voice grew hard. "Because that's the way of things, Cassie."
"The way of what things?" I asked warily.
"Baby, you had to grow up a little today. I wish, well, no matter what I wish, it happened, and you have to accept the fact that in the world outside this house, things are not always as we would have them be."
"But, Mama, it ain't fair. I didn't do nothing to that confounded Lillian Jean. How come Mr. Sims went and pushed me like he did?"
Mama's eyes looked deeply into mine, locked into them, and she said in a tight, clear voice, "Because he thinks Lillian Jean is better than you are, Cassie. And when you..."
"That old scrawny, chicken-leg, snaggle-tooth-crawled..."
"Cassie..." Mama did not raise her voice, but the quiet force of my name silenced me. "Now," she said, folding my hand in hers, I didn't say that Lillian Jean is better than you. I said Mr. Sims only thinks she is. In fact, he thinks she's better than Stacy, or Little Man, or Christopher John.
Just 'cause she's his daughter? I asked, beginning to think Mr. Sims was a bit touched in the head.
No, baby. Because she's white. Mama's hold tightened on mine. But I exclaimed,
"Oh, shoot. White ain't nothing."
Mama's grip did not lessen. It is something, Cassie. White is something, just like black is something. Everybody born on this earth is something, and nobody, no matter what color, is better than anybody else.
Then how come Mr. Sims don't know that?
Because he's one of those people who has to believe that white people are better than black people to make himself feel big. I stared questioningly at Mama, not really understanding. Mama squeezed my hand and explained further. You see, Cassie, many years ago, when our people were first brought from Africa in chains to work as slaves in this country...
Like Big Ma's Papa and Mama?
Mama nodded. Yes, baby. Like Papa Luke and Mama Rachel. Except they were born right here in Mississippi, but their grandparents were born in Africa. And when they came, there were some white people who thought that it was wrong for any people to be slaves. So the people who needed slaves to work in their fields, and the people who were making money bringing slaves from Africa, preached that black people weren't really people like white people were. So slavery was all right. They also said that slavery was good for us because it taught us to be good Christians, like the white people. She sighed deeply, her voice fading into a distant whisper. But they didn't teach us Christianity to save our souls, but to teach us obedience. They were afraid of slave revolts, and they wanted us to learn the Bible's teachings about slaves being loyal to their masters. But even teaching us Christianity didn't make us stop wanting to be free, and many slaves ran away.
Papa Luke ran away, I reminded her, thinking of the story of how great-grandpa had run away 3 times. He had been caught and punished for his disobedience, but his owners had not tried to break him, for he had had a knowledge of herbs and cures. He had tended both the slaves and the animals of the plantation, and it was from him that Big Ma had learned medicines. Mama nodded again. That's right, honey. He was hiding in a cave when freedom came, so I understand. She was silent for a moment, then went on. Well, after a while, slavery became so profitable to people who had slaves, and even to those who didn't, that most folks decided to believe that black people really weren't people like everybody else. And when the Civil War was fought, and Mama Rachel and Papa Luke and all the other slaves were freed, people continued to think that way. Even the Northerners, who fought the war, didn't really see us equal to white people. So, now, even though 70 years have passed since slavery, most white people still think of us as they did then, that we're not as good as they are. And people like Mr. Sims hold on to that belief harder than some other folks because they have little else to hold on to. For him to believe that he is better than we are makes him think that he's important, simply because he's white. Mama relaxed her grip. I knew that she was waiting for me to speak. There was a sinking feeling in my stomach, and I felt as if the world had turned itself upside down with me in it. Then I thought of Lillian Jean, and a surging anger gurgled upward, and I retaliated, "Well, they ain't." But I leaned closer to Mama, anxiously hoping that she would agree with me. Of course they aren't, Mama said. White people may demand our respect, but what we give them is not respect, but fear. What we give to our own people is far more important because it's given freely. Now, you may have to call Lillian Jean Miss because the white people say so, but you'll also call our own young ladies at church Miss because you really do respect them. Baby, we have no choice of what color we're born
or who our parents are, or whether we're rich or poor. What we do have is some choice over what we make of our lives once we're here. Mama cupped my face in her hands, and I prayed to God you'll make the best of yours. She hugged me warmly then, and motioned me under the covers. As she turned the lamp down low, I asked, "Mama, Uncle Hammer, if Mr. Morrison can't stop him, what'll happen?" "Mr. Morrison will bring him back." "But just what if he can't, and Uncle Hammer gets to Mr. Sims?" A shadowy fear fleeted across her face, but disappeared with the dimming light. I think you've done enough growing up for one day, Cassie," she said, without answering my question. "Uncle Hammer'll be all right. Now go to sleep." Mama had been right about Uncle Hammer. When I awoke the next morning and followed the smell of frying bacon and baking biscuits into the kitchen, there he sat at the table, drinking coffee with Mr. Morrison. He was unshaven and looked a bit bleary-eyed, but he was all right. I wondered if Mr. Sims looked so good. I didn't get a chance to ask, because as soon as I had said good morning, Mama called me into her room, where a tub of hot water was waiting by the fireplace. "Hurry up," she said. "Uncle Hammer's going to take us to church." "In his car?" Mama's brow furrowed. "Well, I just don't know. He did say something about hitching up Jack." My smile faded. But then I caught the teasing glint in her eyes, and she began to laugh. "Oh, Mama," I laughed, and splashed into the water. After my bath, I went into my room to dress. When I rejoined Mama, she was combing her hair, which fanned her head like an enormous black halo. As I watched, she shaped the long thickness into a large chignon at the nape of her neck and stuck 6 sturdy hairpins into it. Then, giving the chignon a pat, she reached for her pale blue cotton dress sprinkled with tiny yellow and white flowers and polished white buttons running from top to bottom along its front. She glanced down at me. "You didn't comb your hair." "No'm. I want you to fix me my grown-up hairdo." Mama began buttoning the top of her dress with long flying fingers as I slowly fastened the lower buttons. I loved to help Mama dress. She always smelled of sunshine and soap. When the last button had slipped into place, she buckled a dark blue patent leather belt around her tiny waist and stood ready except for her shoes. She looked very pretty. "Where's your brush?" "Right here," I said, picking up the brush from where I had laid it on the chair. Mama sat down in Papa's rocker, and I sat on the deerskin rug in front of her. Mama divided my hair from ear to ear into 2 sections and braided the front section to one side and the back section right in the center. Then she wound each braid into a flat chignon against my head. My hair was too thick and long for me to do it well myself, but Mama could do it perfectly. I figured I looked my very best that way. When Mama finished, I ran to the mirror, then turned, facing her with a grin. She grinned back and shook her head at my vanity. "One day, Mama, you gonna fix my hair like yours?" "That'll be a few years yet," she answered, readjusting the cardboard lining she had placed in her shoes to protect her feet from the dirt and gravel, which could easily seep through the large holes in the soles. She set the shoes on the floor and stepped into them. "Now, with the soles facing downward and Mama's feet in them, no one could tell what the shiny exteriors hid. Yet I felt uncomfortable for Mama and wished that we had enough money for her to have her shoes fixed, or, better still, buy new ones. After breakfast, Stacy, Christopher John, Little Man, and I sat impatiently by the dying morning fire waiting for Mama, Big Ma, and Uncle Hammer. Uncle Hammer was dressing in the boys' room, and Mama was in with Big Ma. I checked to make sure none of them was about to appear, then leaned toward Stacy and whispered, "You think Uncle Hammer whipped Mr. Sims?"
"No," said Stacy quietly.
"No," cried Little Man.
You don't mean Mr. Sims whipped Uncle Hammer? Stammered an unbelieving Christopher John.
Nothing happened, said Stacy in explanation, as he tugged irritably at his collar.
Nothing?
I repeated, disappointed. Nothing.
How you know?
Asked little man suspiciously. Mama said so. I asked her straight out this morning.
Oh, replied little man, resigned. But something must have happened, I said. I mean, Uncle Hammer and Mr. Morrison look like they haven't even been to bed. How come they look like that if nothing happened?
Mama said Mr. Morrison talked all night to Uncle Hammer. Talked him tired and wouldn't let him go up to the Simses.
Oh, shoot, I exclaimed, my dream of revenge against the Simses vanishing as Stacy talked.
I propped my elbow on my knees, then settled my head in my upraised hands and stared into the glowing embers. A burning knot formed in my throat, and I felt as if my body was not large enough to hold the frustration I felt, nor deep enough to drown the rising anger.
It ain't fair, Christopher John sympathized, patting me lightly with his pudgy hand.
Sure ain't, agreed little man. Cassie, Stacy said softly. At first I didn't look at him, thinking he would go ahead and say what he had to say. But when he didn't, I turned toward him. He leaned forward secretively, and automatically Christopher John and little man did the same. Y'all better be glad nothing happened, he said in a whisper. 'Cause I heard Big Ma tell Mama last night that if Mr. Morrison didn't stop Uncle Hammer, Uncle Hammer might get killed.
Killed?
We echoed as the fire sputtered and died.
Who'd do that? I cried. Not one of them puny Simses.
Stacy started to speak, but then Mama and Big Ma entered, and he cautioned us into silence. When Uncle Hammer joined us, freshly shaven and in another suit, the boys and I put on our coats and headed for the door. Uncle Hammer stopped us.
Stacy, that the only coat you got, son? He asked.
Stacy looked down at his faded cotton jacket. Everyone else did, too. The jacket was too small for him, that was obvious. And compared to Little Man's and Christopher John's and mine, it was admittedly in sadder shape. Yet we were all surprised that Uncle Hammer would ask about it, for he knew as well as anyone that Mama had to buy our clothes in shifts, which meant that we each had to wait our turn for new clothes. Stacy looked at Mama, then back at Uncle Hammer.
Yes, sir, he answered.
Uncle Hammer stared at him, then waving his hand, ordered, "Take it off." Before Stacy could question why, Uncle Hammer disappeared into the boys' room. Again, Stacy looked at Mama.
You'd better do like he says, she said.
Uncle Hammer returned with a long box, store-wrapped in shiny red Christmas paper and a fancy green ribbon. He handed the package to Stacy.
It was supposed to be your Christmas present, but I think I'd better give it to you now. It's cold out there.
Gingerly, Stacy took the box and opened it.
A coat! Cried little man joyously, clapping his hands.
Wool, Mama said reverently. Go ahead, Stacy. Try it on. Stacy eagerly slipped on the coat. It was much too big for him, but Mama said that she could take up the sleeves and that he would grow into it in another year. Stacy beamed down at the coat, then up at Uncle Hammer. A year ago, he would have shot into Uncle Hammer's arms and hugged his thanks, but now, at the manly age of 12, he held out his hand, and Uncle Hammer shook it.
Come on, we'd better go, said Mama.
The morning was gray as we stepped outside, but the rain had stopped. We followed the path of the bedded rocks that led to the barn, careful not to slip into the mud, and got into the Packard, shining clean and bright from the washing Uncle Hammer and Mr. Morrison had given it after breakfast. Inside the Packard, the world was a wine-colored luxury. The boys and I, in the back,
ran our hands over the rich felt seats, tenderly fingered the fancy door handles and window knobs, and peered down amazed at the plush carpet peeping out on either side of the rubber mats. Mr. Morrison, who was not a church-going man, waved goodbye from the barn, and we sped away. As we drove onto the school grounds and parked, the people milling in front of the church turned, staring at the Packard. Then Uncle Hammer stepped from the car and someone cried, "Well, I'll be doggone. It's our Hammer, Hammer Logan." And in a body, the crowd engulfed us. TJ ran up with Moe Turner and Little Willie Wiggins to admire the car. "It's Uncle Hammer's," said Stacy proudly. But before the boys could sufficiently admire the car, Mama and Big Ma shooed us toward the church for the service. It was then that TJ noticed Stacy's new coat. "Uncle Hammer gave it to him," I said. "Ain't it something?" TJ ran his long fingers over the lapels and shrugged.
"It's all right, I guess, if you like that sort of thing."
"All right," I cried, indignant at his casual reaction to the coat. "Boy, that's the finest coat you ever did lay eyes on, and you know it." TJ sighed.
"Like I said, it's all right, if you like looking like a fat preacher."
Then he and Little Willie and Moe laughed and went on ahead. Stacy looked down at the coat with its long sleeves and wide shoulders. His smile faded.
"He don't know what he's talking about," I said. "He's just jealous, that's all."
"I know it," snapped Stacy sourly.
As we slid into the pew in front of TJ, TJ whispered,
"Here comes the preacher,"
then leaned forward and said snidely,
"How do you do, Reverend Logan?"
Stacy turned on TJ, but I poked him hard. "Mama's looking," I whispered, and he turned back around. After church, as TJ and the others looked longingly at the car, Mama said, "Stacy, maybe TJ wants to ride." Before Stacy could reply, I spoke up hurriedly.
"No, ma'am, Mama. He got something else he gotta do."
Then under my breath, so that I wouldn't be guilty of a lie, I added, "He gotta walk home like he always do."
"That'll teach him," whispered little man.
"Yeah," agreed Christopher John. But Stacy sulked by the window and said nothing. The sun was out now, and Uncle Hammer suggested that we take a real ride before going home. He drove us the full 22 miles up to Strawberry by way of the Jackson Road, one of two roads leading to the town. But Mama and Big Ma objected so much to going through Strawberry that he turned the big car around and headed back toward home, taking the old soldiers' road. Supposedly, rebel soldiers had once marched up the road and across Soldiers' Bridge to keep the town from falling into the hands of the Yankee army, but I have my doubts about that. After all, who in his right mind would want to capture Strawberry, or defend it either, for that matter? The road was hilly and curving, and as we sped over it, scattered roadstones hit sharply against the car's underbelly, and the dust swelled up in rolls of billowing clouds behind us. Little man, Christopher John, and I shrieked with delight each time the car climbed a hill and dropped suddenly downward, fluttering our stomachs. Eventually, the road intersected with the Jefferson Davis School Road. Uncle Hammer stopped the car at the intersection, and leaning his right arm heavily over the steering wheel, motioned languidly at the Wallace store.
"Got me a good mind to burn that place out," he said.
"Hammer, hush that kind of talk," ordered Big Ma, her eyes growing wide.
"Me and John Henry and David grew up together, and John Henry and me even fought in their war together. What good was it? A black man's life ain't worth the life of a cow fly down here."
"I know that, son, but that kind of talk gets you hung, and you know it."
Mama touched Uncle Hammer's arm.
"There might be another way, Hammer. like I told you. Now don't go do something foolish. Wait for David. Talk to him.
Uncle Hammer looked glassy-eyed at the store, then sighed and eased the Packard across the road toward Soldier's Bridge. We were taking the long way home. Soldier's Bridge was built before the Civil War. It was spindly and wooden, and each time I had to cross it, I held my breath until I was safely on the other side. Only one vehicle could cross at a time, and whoever was on the bridge first was supposed to have the right of way, although it didn't always work that way. More than once, when I had been in the wagon with Mama or Big Ma, we had had to back off the bridge when a white family started across after we were already on it. As the bridge came into view, the other side of the river was clearly visible, and it was obvious to everyone that an old Model T truck, overflowing with red-headed children, had reached the bridge first and was about to cross. But suddenly, Uncle Hammer gassed the Packard and sped onto the creaking structure. The driver of the truck stopped, and for no more than a second hesitated on the bridge, then without a single honk of protest, backed off so that we could pass.
"Hammer!" Big Ma cried.
"They think you're Mr. Granger."
"Well, now, won't they be surprised when we reach the other side?" said Uncle Hammer.
As we came off the bridge, we could see the Wallaces, all three of them, Dewberry, Thurston, and Caleb, touch their hats respectfully, then immediately freeze as they saw who we were. Uncle Hammer, straight-faced and totally calm, touched the brim of his own hat in polite response, and without a backward glance sped away, leaving the Wallaces gaping silently after us.
Stacy, Christopher John, Little Man, and I laughed, but Mama's cold glance made us stop.
"You shouldn't have done that, Hammer," she said quietly.
"The opportunity, dear sister, was too much to resist."
"But one day we'll have to pay for it, believe me," she said. "One day we'll pay."
Chapter 7. "Stacy, go bring me your coat," Mama said a few days later as we gathered around the fire after supper. "I've got time to take up the sleeves now."
"Uh-oh,"
exclaimed Christopher John, then immediately opened his reader as Mama looked down at him. Little Man cupped his hand and whispered to me,
"Boy, now he's gonna get it."
That's all right, Mama," stuttered Stacy. The coat's all right like it is." Mama opened her sewing box.
"It's not all right. Now go get it for me."
Stacy stood up and started slowly toward his room. Little Man, Christopher John, and I watched him closely, wondering what he was going to do. He actually went into the room, but was gone only a moment before he reappeared and nervously clutched the back of his chair.
"I ain't got the coat, Mama," he said.
"Not got the coat?" cried Big Ma.
Uncle Hammer looked up sharply from his paper, but remained silent.
"Stacy," Mama said irritably, "bring me that coat, boy."
"But, Mama, I really ain't got it. I gave it to T.J.
"T.J.?"
Mama exclaimed.
"Yes, ma'am, Mama," Stacy answered, then went on hurriedly as Mama's eyes glittered with rising anger. "The coat was too big for me, and T.J. said it made me look like a preacher. And he said since it fit him just right, he'd take it off my hands till I grow into it. Then that-a-way, all the guys would stop laughing at me and calling me preacher."
He paused, waiting for someone to speak. But the only sound was the heavy breathing and the crackle of burning hickory. Then, seeming more afraid of the silence than putting his neck further into the noose, he added,
"But I didn't give it to him for good, Mama. Just lent it to him till I get big enough for it, and then..."
Stacy's voice faded into an inaudible whisper as Mama slowly put the sewing box on the table behind her. I thought she was headed for the wide leather strap hanging in the kitchen, but she did not rise. In quiet anger, she glared at Stacy and admonished,
In this house, we don't give away what loved ones give to us. Now go bring me that coat. Backing away from her anger, Stacy turned to leave, but Uncle Hammer stopped him.
No, he said. Leave the coat where it is.
Mama turned bewildered toward Uncle Hammer.
Hammer? What are you saying?
That's the best coat Stacy's ever had, and probably ever will have as long as he lives in this house. David and I can't afford a coat like that.
Uncle Hammer leaned back in his chair, his eyes cold on Stacy. Seems to me, if Stacy's not smart enough to hold on to a good coat, he don't deserve it. As far as I'm concerned, TJ can just keep that coat permanently. At least he knows a good thing when he sees it.
Hammer, Big Ma said, let the boy go get the coat. That TJ probably done told him all sorts.
Well, ain't Stacy got a brain? What the devil should he care what TJ thinks or TJ says? Who is this TJ anyway? Does he put clothes on Stacy?